You are Locked On Timberwolves, your daily Minnesota Timberwolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Beacon. I'm the host of Locked On Wolves. I'm also the co-editor of Dunking with Wolves, the Timberwolves site on the Fansided Network. Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week coming up later in the episode. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Happy Victory Wednesday, I guess, is a post-game pod, as well as a game day. The Timberwolves are in Sacramento for game two of two this evening on Tuesday night. And recording this, I guess, overnight, Tuesday into Wednesday, following the Wolves' victory on Tuesday. We're going to talk all about the Wolves' win over the Kings in this one. That's going to be the primary focus of the episode. We're going to do our typical post-game pod format, which means we're going to talk about the game flow, what went down, how the Wolves pulled away late. Then we'll talk about key takeaways. And there's several in this one from what the Wolves were doing offensively, how the Kings were slowing them down early, and then the adjustments the Wolves made down the stretch. And then we'll do individual studs and duds. And it was, it's mostly, honestly, outside of like the transition on an individual basis, it's going to be really hard to pick out a player or two, especially that didn't play well for the Timberwolves in this one, because it was an exciting up and down game. The Wolves were firing on all cylinders offensively for most of the game, and it was just kind of a fun watch. And that was to be expected. Two of the league's worst defensive teams, and the Kings, a very good offensive team, and the Wolves playing very well offensively of late with a healthy Russell and a healthy Towns. So, of course, it was always going to be entertaining, and it was exactly that in a high-scoring affair on Tuesday in Sacktown. So that'll be the show today. And then, of course, the Wolves play again Wednesday night. So we'll do this again in about 24 hours from recording this now. We'll be recording another one, and hopefully it's another Timberwolves win. So at any rate, a quick reminder here off the top that you can follow the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. That includes Apple, Google, Spotify, and, of course, the all-new Odyssey app. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. And again, anywhere that you get podcasts. You can also follow on Twitter at Locked On T-Wolves and at B Beacon. That's B Beacon, two B's, two E's, C-K-E-N. Okay, so game flow in this one. Again, I guess setting the stage quickly, the Wolves beat the Kings, I think exactly 2 weeks ago, just over 2 weeks ago at Target Center. And these are only the second and third times that the two teams are playing this season, these two games in Sacramento. The Kings had lost nine in a row. The loss to the Wolves was kind of right in the middle of that losing streak. They beat the Mavericks by double digits on Sunday. And of course, the Wolves have been alternating one win, two losses, one win, two losses. They had the two blowout losses last week at home to Brooklyn and Milwaukee. They had the big win over Miami on Friday. And Towns missed those two losses last week. He came back. They won on Friday. And then the Wolves were blown out by the Clippers on Sunday. So both teams coming off, you know, the Wolves coming off a loss after an exciting win on Friday, the Kings coming off a win after a nine-game losing streak. And so it would have been easy to see the Wolves kind of come into this and think, okay, we can kind of sleepwalk through this thing and beat the Kings. But we saw in Towns' post-game comments after the loss to the Clippers on Sunday saying that he thought they came into that game too cool because they had beaten Miami on Friday. And clearly they were intentional from the start in this one. They were going to come out and play hard and not let that be the case in this one. The offense was amazing early in this game, really throughout the game for the Timberwolves, which was certainly not the case against the Clippers. It was absolutely not the case with no Karl-Anthony Towns last week on that homestand against Brooklyn and Milwaukee. There was also no defense early in this game. The first quarter was a 43-39 Kings advantage at the end of the first 12 minutes. It was all offense, no defense, terrible transition defense that really carried throughout much of the game until the fourth quarter. The communication continues to be terrible. There was one play in particular that stuck out to me in the first quarter when it was in transition, and Towns, for the most part, had been checking Hassan Whiteside, and McDaniels had been guarding Harrison Barnes early in the game, and it was in transition. So Towns had picked up Barnes in the corner, and nobody was talking. Towns wasn't saying, hey, get mine. Nobody that was standing kind of in this cluster in the paint was saying anything. So Barnes missed, I think it was Barnes that shot the corner three, misses it. Whiteside literally just kind of waltzes down the lane, gets a rebound. I guess he didn't literally waltz, but you know what I mean? He literally walked to the front of the rim, got the rebound and the putback, and Towns didn't get there in time to contest. McDaniels was a little late, but at least tried to get there. And that was just a communication issue. I mean, Towns was doing the right thing in getting the guy that ran to the corner to shoot the three. McDaniels and I think it was the rest of the starting lineup, Okogie, Edwards, were all kind of clustered near the right elbow, and nobody was talking and noticing that Whiteside was trailing the play and just got right to the front of the rim for an easy putback. That sort of thing happens far too often. I mean, once a game, whatever, it happens. There's a lot of possessions in a game. The Wolves play fast. That happens. But it happens way too often for the Timberwolves. And that was, to me, that was a worrisome sign that it was happening that early in the game. And there wasn't much of an effort to stop Whiteside from getting the rebound and or even from getting the putback once he got the ball. I thought that the Wolves were in for a long night at that moment. Thankfully, I was wrong. D'Angelo Russell came in. He was piping hot. And actually, before we get to D'Lo, Anthony Edwards was a monster in the first quarter. He had 16 points in the first quarter alone and then didn't score until well into the second half beyond that. But he had 16 in the first quarter, hit three threes, was really good. D'Lo came in, dropped 18 points in his first 9 minutes, went 4 of 5 on his first 5 3-point attempts, and ended up with 26 in the first half. According to Dave Benz on Bally Sports North, that was his second highest scoring half in his career. He had 30 in a first half when he played for Golden State back in December of 19. And this was 26 in the first half for D'Lo. Again, 18 points in his first 9 minutes. Now, he gave a lot of it back on defense. We'll talk more about his defense a little bit later on. But the Wolves in the second quarter at least pulled ahead for a little while. The Kings actually finished the second quarter on a 17-8 run. And this was a tie game at halftime. And it was, what, tied at 74, I think? Yeah, tied at 74 at halftime, which is, I guess we all should have seen this coming. But come on. I mean, they gave up 74 points in the half. At least they scored 74. Again, D'Lo with 26. Anton scored all in the second quarter. I should mention both Naz Reid and Josh Okogie had great second quarters. The Wolves actually had a 5-point lead midway through the frame. They pushed it to 9, and then the Kings went on that 17-8 run, and this thing was a tied affair at halftime. The third quarter was kind of back and forth. Really, all the third and the first part of the fourth quarter was back and forth. There were some, you know, positive steps. You know, the Wolves would take a 2-3 possession lead. The Kings would come right back and take a brief lead themselves. D'Angelo Russell only scored 2 points in the second half of this game. And he continued to be bad defensively, just didn't bring much to the table offensively. He had there was one play where he completely over dribbled, got the ball stolen from him, and the Kings got a dunk coming back the other way. That was when the Wolves actually had a lead midway through the third, gave it all back. And it was really kind of back and forth. The Wolves trailed by 4 going to the fourth quarter. And then right at the midway point, about 7 minutes left in the game, the Kings were up by 1. The Wolves go on a quick 7-0 run. They're up 6 points with 4.5 minutes left. And then they just keep extending the lead. And we'll talk about how they did it here in a minute, what they were running offensively. But it was kind of, you know, Towns in the mid post. And, you know, Towns got fouled and made some free throws. Towns made a couple of nice passes to Cutters, Rubio, Jaden McDaniels, others. And the Wolves shifted what they were doing offensively. The Kings couldn't adjust. They couldn't double Towns easily where he was getting the ball on the floor. And the Wolves continued to be effective offensively. They were, and part of this was due to how bad Sacramento's defense is. But regardless of the point in the game, the Wolves offense was firing on all cylinders. And that hasn't happened a ton. It's happened a lot more recently when D'Lo and Kat are both healthy and they've got this nice point guard rotation of D'Lo, Jordan McLaughlin, Ricky Rubio. Towns is on the court a bunch. Naz Reid is much better in a backup role in short minutes, playing some 4 alongside Towns, which he didn't do a ton of in this game. But having that option, he did do it a little bit, is always really effective too. Even without Malik Beasley, this team's offense can be so potent. And against a team that's one of the league's worst, or actually the worst defense in the league, in the Kings, it was only a matter of time. As long as the Wolves could play some semblance of defense, their offense was going to allow them to surge ahead. And that's what happened. The defense actually tightened up a little bit in the fourth quarter. It was more effort than anything else, which is another thing we'll talk about next segment here in key takeaways. But the effort ratcheted up. The rebounding was great down the stretch, which is another thing we haven't been able to say frequently with this team. But again, the Kings are one of the few teams. I said this in the show on Tuesday leading into the game, that the Kings are one of the few teams the Wolves are better than on defense and better than on the glass. And that's what was huge down the stretch in this game. And the Wolves pulled ahead by double digits. They were up 11 with 3.5 minutes left. And it wasn't closer than that. They ended up winning by 14. So they held on down the stretch. Overall, a very fun game. Of course it was. There was 254 points scored in 48 minutes of basketball. So of course it was fun to watch. And the Timberwolves ended up pulling this one out. So next, what I want to do is look at key takeaways. I want to talk about defensive issues a little bit more. I want to talk about the pros of the offense and then what the Wolves did in crunch time, which really was the final 7 minutes of this game, what Minnesota did offensively that the Kings couldn't find an answer for. Before we do that, though, let's talk about Michelob Ultra. And of course, that means we're talking about Karl-Anthony Towns. Why, you ask? That's because Karl-Anthony Towns is this week's Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. Towns did not play last week in the Tuesday-Wednesday games, the Brooklyn and Milwaukee losses, but his impact since he came back against Miami on Friday, his effort at least against the Clippers in the loss on Sunday, but now this win over the Kings, the Wolves are 2-1 since he came back over the past week, and he's been fantastic. Karl-Anthony Towns is playing with joy. He's playing with enjoyment, happiness, all of the good things. Karl-Anthony Towns is doing that. He had 24 points on 14 shots last Friday, 4 of 4 on threes in the win over Miami. It was huge. He was a massive part of that win. And he dropped 16, 6, and 5 in only 25 minutes in the loss against the Clippers on Sunday. So he was still effective in the loss. And then, of course, in this game, we'll talk more about him here in a little bit, but he had 26, 18, and 5 with 4 blocks, had 4 made threes, made 4 free throws in this game as well, was really good on both ends of the floor. And you know, since he's been back and playing well and healthy and now playing with D'Angelo Russell, the joy, the happiness, the enjoyment, it's all there. As Michelob Ultra reminds you, it is only worth it if you enjoy it. Joy creates success, and enjoyment isn't the end game. It's the whole game. Michelob Ultra, 2.6 carbs and 95 calories. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? Karl-Anthony Towns is this week's Michelob Ultra Player of the Week. This year, the Locked On Podcast Network is partnering with the Draft Network to cover the NFL Draft live. Get insight and analysis from Locked On local experts and the Draft Network's national experts. Subscribe to the Locked On NFL YouTube page to watch live 3-day coverage of the NFL Draft April 29th through May 1st. Okay, let's talk about key takeaways from this game. And as I mentioned, there's several. First of all, let's talk about the defense. Now, couple things. First of all, the Kings are a good offensive team. They are. I know that they're not a good team overall. That's because they're so bad in every other possible facet of the game, mostly defense and rebounding. But they're a good offensive team. Even without Marvin Bagley, they're a good offensive team. Still, the effort for me, for some players on the Timberwolves on defense, is really tough to watch. Most of the time. D'Angelo Russell's the main culprit. To be clear, he's not the only one. Anthony Edwards is the one I've probably talked about more than D'Angelo Russell, and maybe I've messed that up a little bit, but I think it's more obvious sometimes based on who he's covering and how he's used and how defenses attack Edwards. But D'Angelo Russell had a couple of points in this game. There was one right after a timeout. I think it was in the second quarter where it was right out of a timeout. D'Lo was guarding his man in the left corner. I forget who it was. Completely lost him on a back cut. Wasn't paying attention at all. Didn't see him. He had cut underneath the basket, was all the way into the right corner. D'Lo is still standing on the left block where he thought he was guarding his guy in the left corner. His man's actually in the right corner. By the time he saw him catch the ball, or by the time he caught the ball, that's when D'Lo realized that he was on the other side of the floor. D'Lo got there in time to get within maybe 6 feet of him, didn't even get a hand up, and that was it. It was a made basket, of course. And I mean, yeah, everybody gets beat occasionally with their head turned, but this was like he just wasn't noticing at all and then didn't bother to make the extra effort. And like the next possession or two possessions later down the court, he's guarding the ball handler and there's a screen set and he does like a weird spin move when he goes under the screen and doesn't get a good contest up. The Timberwolves want their guards to fight through screens more often than not. And D'Lo, I said this when they acquired him last year and over the offseason when we talked a lot about the defensive issues or concerns, I guess, with D'Lo and Towns on the floor together, is that D'Angelo Russell does not fight through screens very well. And at the time, we only knew that Jordan McLaughlin was the other or Jordan McLaughlin was the only other point guard on the roster. This was before the Ricky Rubio trade. And Rubio does a pretty good job of fighting through screens, but he's a strong enough and long enough guard and smart enough guard to make that work. But he struggled with it earlier this season. He's been better lately. D'Lo never has fought through screens, and that's more an effort thing than anything else, right? McLaughlin's too small. He a lot of times can't fight through screens even if he tries. Russell and Rubio should be able to do their best, should be able to be effective when they do their best fighting through screens. And D'Lo just doesn't do it. And off the ball, he loses his man too often. He helps, kind of gets caught in no man's land. I talked about this the other day where he doesn't help enough to really help, but he helps enough that he's too far from his man and he doesn't recover in time to contest a shot. And defenses can either get an easy three up, which is usually what happens, or they can attack his closeout and get past him really easily. That's an issue for D'Lo. And there's a reason why Golden State soured on him, right? There's a reason why the plus minus numbers don't always like D'Lo. The defensive numbers really don't like D'Lo. He's fantastic on offense. If he would try on defense, and Towns is there now. Towns tries very consistently defensively. He's a plus at worst. He's a slightly plus defensive player, an average to slightly plus defensive player. Russell is still a very clear minus, and it's effort more often than not is the issue. Now, he's got quick hands. He gets he gets a strip or two every game or a deflected pass because he's a smart player and he's got a good size wingspan and he's got quick hands, but he's not laterally quick. He doesn't get into a stance and play defense consistently, and he's not a consistently good off-ball defender either. And that's going to be an issue for the Wolves moving forward as long as he's on the court, unless they can surround him with additional rangy defenders. And Jaden McDaniels is a step in the right direction there. Josh Okogie is a good defender as well. But when they're on the court with, call it Malik Beasley, say it's D'Angelo Russell, Malik Beasley, Jaden McDaniels, Josh Okogie, and Karl-Anthony Towns, you're talking about two minus defenders in Beasley and Russell, two plus defenders in Okogie and McDaniels, and an average defender in Towns. You can probably get away with that and still have a defense that's in the 18 to 22 range, right? Ranked defensive rating wise in the league, if that's your primary starting five. I think that's feasible if McDaniels is as good as he appears to be defensively and if that carries through. But it's going to be a little dicey at times, and it certainly was in this game. Also, communication. I talked about this, I guess, in first segment, but transition defense communication continues to be a team-wide issue, not just D'Lo. That needs to get better. I want to focus next, though, on the offense. The Timberwolves early in the game, of course, they wanted to run the ball, the offense through Towns. That's what Chris Finch wants to do. The Kings were denying Towns the ball every opportunity they could. They were they weren't just doubling him on the catch. They weren't really letting him catch the ball. Hassan Whiteside did a good job trying to push Towns off the block and get him out of position, but the Wolves couldn't get a clean entry pass to Towns. And I guess the one thing I could say about that is it's a good thing Jeff Teague wasn't on the Timberwolves, because he would have forced at least three entry passes that would have all been stolen. If you watched any Jeff Teague on the Timberwolves over the 2.5 seasons he was in Minnesota, at least twice a game, he was getting entry passes, post-entry passes stolen. But the Wolves just basically didn't force it. And they were able to be effective offensively because Anthony Edwards and D'Angelo Russell were so hot early in the game. And it worked for the Timberwolves to be able to just rely on those guys. And Towns hit a couple of threes, but didn't really do anything inside the arc or on the perimeter in terms of playmaking or ball handling at all. And the Kings did a good job on Towns early. But again, because the Kings are so bad in other areas defensively, the Wolves were able to make their open jumpers. If the Wolves missed some of those open threes that Edwards and D'Lo hit, and they weren't all completely open, some were tough shots, then this is a completely different game. The Wolves wouldn't have been within shouting distance at halftime, much less tied, because the Kings were scoring at will. But thankfully, they were able to make their open shots. And then down the stretch, the Wolves just simply shifted their strategy. And it's not like this is something they haven't done before, and the Kings should have been ready for it, but they just started giving the ball to Towns in the mid post, and super hard to double in the mid post or at the elbows, the free throw line extended out towards the mid post. It's just a hard spot on the floor to double, and you're susceptible to back cuts. You're susceptible to skip passes to the opposite corner. And Towns did a really good job. He did a little bit of everything. He hit a couple of tough jumpers himself. He backed his way down into the post. He had a couple of opportunities in transition where he got to the free throw line. There was at least one time where he backed it out and shot a three, but he was only facing single coverage. There were multiple really good cuts. Anthony Edwards had a couple. Ricky Rubio had one at a key point in the game. I don't remember. I think it was like a two possession game at the time, and it led to a Kings timeout, but Rubio had a late cut. He kind of flashed to the front of the, like right inside the free throw line, like 10 feet away from the rim. Towns hit him and Rubio hit a little, one of his little leaners from the left elbow, and the Kings called timeout. It was like a possession or two after that. Towns did the same thing, but the pass was to McDaniels, who of course got a dunk instead of a 10-foot jumper. But I mean, think about if your cutters are Anthony Edwards and Jaden McDaniels and Malik Beasley and not Ricky Rubio, right? I mean, how much more dynamic is that if the Wolves can surround Towns with that kind of talent? And if Jaden McDaniels is diving to the rim, or Anthony Edwards is diving to the rim, and Malik Beasley and D'Angelo Russell are spaced out on the perimeter, how are defenses going to stop that? It's like the Nuggets with Jokic, except for Towns is a better shooter than Jokic, and he's more dynamic with the ball in his hands in terms of what he's going to do to try and score. Jokic is a better passer. I'm not arguing that at all. But if Towns can be a fraction of the passer that Jokic is, and I think he is, and then add to it how good he is offensively, that's what Chris Finch is trying to do. It's similar to how Denver uses Jokic. It's not exactly the same. But the personnel around him, again, Edwards and McDaniels as cutters, D'Lo, Malik Beasley eventually spotting up on the perimeter, it's such an effective crunch time offense, and just the Wolves just kept feeding him and feeding him and feeding him until this was a double digit lead. And it was just too late for the Kings, regardless of how bad the Wolves were defensively for most of the night, although they were fine in the fourth quarter. But at any rate, genius play calling by Finch, and just going back to the well over and over, he kind of abandoned the pick and roll late in the game because there was, I mean, just keep giving Towns the ball where they can't double him and they can't load up on Anthony Edwards going to the rim. And Ant still got his. I mean, he had plenty of shots. We'll talk about that in the next segment here in Studs and Duds. He had plenty of shot opportunities and was good down the stretch. But it's one of the many ways the Wolves can attack you. They can have Anthony Edwards initiate offense and have D'Lo coming off of screens and, you know, curling around getting catch and shoot opportunities. That's what they tried to do well, I guess there was no crunch time against Brooklyn and Milwaukee last week, but that's what they tried to do offensively a bunch without Towns. That's an option. You can have D'Angelo Russell operating in pick and roll with Karl-Anthony Towns. You could have Rubio operating with D'Lo and Anthony Edwards off the ball. You could have Karl-Anthony Towns initiating the offense, or you can go Towns in the mid post, which is what really worked in this game. I'll be really curious to see if the Wolves adjust for Wednesday's game, or if they just try and do the same thing against the Kings again and see if Sacramento adjusts. I think that's probably the solution because they're the 30th ranked defensive team for a reason. But we'll see in this chess match, I guess, between Luke Walton and Chris Finch, what happens. But great execution by the Wolves and great coaching by Finch down the stretch in this one. Okay, let's close by talking individual studs and duds. And there's a lot to talk about. Again, I mean, this was a fun game. There's lots of guys who had good stat lines and were effective offensively. So we're going to dive into that. First, let's talk about Built Bar. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar of all time. It tastes exactly like a candy bar. I swear by it. I will go to bat for Built Bar every day of the week. I enjoyed a Cherry Barcia this afternoon. That's one of their six newest flavors, as well as Caramel Brownie Cookies and Cream. Also, Coconut Brownie Chunk is back, and that is the number one flavor, hands down. There's no argument. Number two for me is probably Cookies and Cream, followed closely by Cherry Barcia, and really anything with caramel. Anything with brownie, they all taste like candy bars. Also, they're all covered in 100% chocolate. They're all soft and easy to chew. You can lose or maintain weight while still indulging in a delicious treat. All Built Bars are low calorie, low sugar, high protein, and high fiber. If you're on the keto diet, they are perfect. Right now, you can go to builtbar.com and use the promo code LOCKED15. You'll get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at builtbar.com. Let's also talk about betonline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. The NBA, MLB, and the NHL are all in full swing. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV, and real-time updated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the news, scores, and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. Receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Okay, before we jump into individual studs and duds, a reminder that April 19th, which is the start of this week, so right now through the 26th, you can listen to the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021, presented by Locked On and Odyssey, featuring analysis from NFL experts Michael Irvin, Jason LaCanfora, and Brian Baldinger, our local experts for every team making trades and picking the next stars of their team. Search the Ultimate Mock Draft 2021 on the new Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Odyssey is your audio home for all the sports, podcasts, music, and news that matter to you. That's Odyssey, A-U-D-A-C-Y. Okay, let's talk individual studs and duds. Again, a fun, high-scoring, offensive, completely offensive game. Of course, there's going to be plenty to talk about here. And of course, there were some gaudy stat lines. But also, you know, obviously, we want to consider not just the stat line, but how do these guys play? So I'm going to give a, I'm not going to try and like mess around with this too much. Anthony Edwards deserves to be a stud in this game. 28 points on 21 shots is fine. It's not ultra efficient. It's fine. He was so good in the first and very good in the fourth that the second and third quarter, he wasn't great in the middle of the game, but it wasn't that big of a deal. He had 16 in the first quarter, hit three threes early, was pretty smart with his shot selection outside of a heat check three late in the quarter. And at that point, it was really hard to blame him. It was kind of a broken floor situation anyway. And he was good in the fourth. He took what the defense gave him, had 28 points on 11 of 21 shooting. So you know, still better than 50% from the field. 5 of 12 on threes. He did only have one free throw attempt. He played a team high 38 minutes, pitched in 4 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block. He did have 3 turnovers. So it was a little bit of a mixed bag, but that's only because the second and third quarter were a little rocky for him. And the Kings, they didn't lock down defensively, but they at least adjusted what they were doing. And the Wolves kind of had to find their way in the middle stages of the game. But he was good. 28 points on 11 of 21, 5 made threes, and 3 assists, 3 steals, and a block for Ant. I mean, it was a good game. It was a lot of fun to watch. He made a couple of massive dunks and probably should have gotten to the free throw line a couple of additional times, which is kind of par for the course for Ant. Karl-Anthony Towns also, 26 points, 18 rebounds, 5 assists. He got off to a slow start offensively because the Kings were so dedicated to trying to deny the ball, entry into Towns. And so he played some catch up in terms of the scoring category. He shot 9 of 17. So he was also above 50%, 4 of 9 outside the arc, which is great. 4 of 6 at the free throw line. So, you know, he probably could have gotten there a little bit more. He had 7 offensive rebounds. You can't tell me he should have only had 6 free throw attempts. But he also pitched in 5 assists and 4 blocks, only committed 3 fouls, had 3 turnovers, was a +7 in 36 minutes. Just a really good game from Kat. Well-rounded, did a little bit of everything, was really good in the paint defensively. Beyond the 4 blocks, he was in the right place at the right time far more often than not in this game. So one of the better Kat games we've seen of late in terms of just being well-rounded. He's had some of those lower rebound games, the win against Miami. I think he had 5 boards in that game. So to see him be active, and again, this is a Kings team that is one of the league's worst rebounding teams. I mean, who, outside of Hassan Whiteside, there's nobody that's a clear plus rebounder for their position on this team. So it made sense that Towns was able to kind of have his way on the boards. So good game for Kat. The third stud for me, if I'm only picking one more, I'm going to have to pick D'Angelo Russell just because of how good he was in the first half. But let me get to who I almost picked here in a moment. D'Lo had 28 on 13 shots, which is absurd. 10 of 13 shooting, 6 of 8 on threes. And I believe he was 6 of 7 in the first half. But he had 28, 26 of them in the first half, 2 of 2 on free throws, 6 assists, only 2 turnovers. He added 3 rebounds. He was a -1 in 25 minutes. He was somehow the only Timberwolves player who was a negative plus minus. And I always add this caveat. If you listen to the show regularly, you probably get tired of me saying this. There's a ton of noise in single game plus minus. It is not gospel. It's not really an accurate way to determine much. However, when you're the only guy on the team with the negative plus minus, you know, you got to think twice about it and wonder if maybe there's something there. And if you watched the game and you watched him defensively, there was something there. He struggled defensively, but he was so good on offense early in the game. I'm not going to say it didn't matter, but it more than canceled it out, right? I mean, he was really, really good on offense. So I almost gave the third stud to Jaden McDaniels. He had 13 and 6 in 30 minutes, 6 of 8 shooting, 1 of 2 on threes. He had a block. He was +8 in 30 minutes, was really good on defense. The Wolves stuck him on Harrison Barnes for stretches. He also ended up switched on to both De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield pretty frequently. The Wolves were really kind of able to try and contain the Kings' best offensive players with McDaniels and Okogie, and it mostly worked. De'Aaron Fox had 14 points on 17 shots in this game, had three turnovers, was a minus 21. Buddy Hield had 11 points on 11 shots. Harrison Barnes had a fine game, 28 and 5. But if you can hold Fox to 14 points on 17 shots against the Kings, you're in good shape. And that wasn't strictly McDaniels by any means, but there were a couple of strong possessions where he was switched onto Fox that he did really well. He forced him into a turnover once. I think it was a shot clock violation. He blocked his shot at one point. So just a good all-around game for McDaniels and a good defensive game plan for the Wolves, at least against De'Aaron Fox and Buddy Hield, who are both guys that have really hurt the Timberwolves the last couple of seasons in their matchups. Remember, Buddy Hield had that monster game in the big comeback last January, but Buddy didn't do much in this game at all. In fact, I guess I'd have to look at the game log, but I can't imagine that Buddy Hield has ever shot worse than 3 of 11 against the Timberwolves. All 11 of his field goal attempts, by the way, were three-point attempts, and he only made 3 of them. So great game from Jaden McDaniels on both ends of the floor. If I have to pick a dud, which is a tough thing to do, I guess, I don't know. I mean, I guess I'd go with Juancho Hernan Gomez. He still had 5 points, 2 rebounds, 2 assists. But he missed all 4 of his 3-point attempts, and he was only 1 of 4 at the free throw line. And if you combine free throw line and 3-pointers together and go 1 of 8, that's not great. Your offensive numbers are not going to be efficient. But he wasn't awful in this game. I think really for me, the dud was the Timberwolves transition defense. And to a lesser extent, their help defense and offense, their communication, which I guess has always been an issue all season long. But I mean, like Jordan McLaughlin had 6 points, 2 of 2 on threes. He had 5 assists. In just 13 minutes. Jared Vanderbilt had 4 rebounds in 14 minutes, was really active. Haven't even talked about Naz Reid. He was great in the second quarter. 10 points, 4 rebounds in this game in 14 minutes. Rubio only had 6 points, missed all 3 of his 3-point attempts, but he had 11 assists in this game and was on the court down the stretch, played solid defense against De'Aaron Fox and others. This was just a solid all-around Timberwolves game against an opponent that, frankly, and I said this on Tuesday's show, the Timberwolves are better than the Sacramento Kings. They just are. They just haven't been healthy. And actually now, if you look at their records, they're only like 6.5 games behind the Kings in the standings. They're not going to pass them with only, you know, 3.5 weeks left in the season. But if these teams were healthy, if all things are equal all season, there's no question the Timberwolves are a better team than the Kings. I mean, Towns and Russell are both better than anyone the Kings have on their roster. De'Aaron Fox is nice. He's a nice story. It's nice that he's been improving continually since he came into the league. But you can't tell me that, I mean, nobody would argue he's better than Towns. And you could certainly make the argument that D'Angelo Russell is a superior player to De'Aaron Fox. So, I mean, at any rate, I don't want to turn this into a Wolves are better than the Kings thing because, I mean, who really cares at this point, right? But, you know, neither team is making the playoffs, most likely. But the point is, this is a winnable game. Tomorrow is a winnable game. Wednesday is a winnable game, I should say. And the Wolves have a legit chance to win 2 in a row for the first time since late December, to sweep the season series against the Sacramento Kings. And I don't know, is momentum a word that we can say in regards to the Timberwolves? Like, does that make any sense at this point? But quite honestly, I mean, this is a really positive step for the Wolves to win this game fairly easily down the stretch, to pull away, to get to play the Kings again on Wednesday. And I'm sure that game will be even more closely contested late. But if the Wolves can beat the Kings, I mean, you play at Utah, home against Utah, that's tough. But then you have Houston, Golden State, New Orleans, Memphis. All 4 of those are winnable games. Houston, Golden State, New Orleans, and Memphis. The Wolves can make some real noise towards the end of the season. And we can have this debate again. I've talked through it several times. Do they want to win? Do they want to tank? What do the fans want to happen? It's in the best interest of this team to keep winning. It just is. You don't lose for the hope that you, for the 40% chance that you can keep that pick. I just don't think that makes sense. You need some positivity going into the offseason. You need to see how Towns and D'Lo play together. And now they're 6-5 in 11 games this season, playing together, Karl-Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell. We still don't know what that pairing looks like when you add Malik Beasley as the third guy. We don't have enough evidence for that yet either. So all I know is the Wolves actually finally broke that 2-loss, 1-win streak that's been going back since late March, like literally almost a month. It was win, 2 losses, win, 2 losses, win, 2 losses, win, 2 losses, win, 1 loss against the Clippers and a win against Sacramento. So breaking that streak, coming out of this game feeling good, have Sacramento again Wednesday night. And who knows, in 24 hours, this could all come crashing down. And then this whole last couple minutes of me being positive about what happens next for the Wolves, could just be a really sad soundbite that is completely irrelevant in, like I said, in 24 hours. So we'll see. But at any rate, be sure that you're following the podcast because we're going to be back post-game again on Wednesday night, same time, same place. Everywhere you listen to podcasts, you'll be able to get the post-game pod. And a reminder, if you're not already following, it is anywhere you listen. So Apple, Google, Spotify, and of course, the all-new Audacy app. That's A-U-D-A-C-Y, the Audacy app. You can also follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnTWolves. And my account is at BBeacon. That's BBeacon, two Bs, two Es, C-K-E-N. That's all we have for you today. Thanks for listening to the Locked On Wolves podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Remember, the Locked On Network is your local experts on all the biggest stories. And a reminder that today's show was brought to you by Michelob Ultra. At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Once again, I'm Ben Beacon. This is the Locked On Wolves podcast, and we'll catch you next time.